the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
World's greatest podcast never disappoints. I mean, you talk about a unique podcast. We've got Greg Gard getting ready to play Michigan, all right? And we know Greg Gard's kind of a button-down dude. I mean, that's just the way it is. And then we have Matt James and Tyler Cameron, the runner-up in The Bachelor and the current Bachelor, all right, talking more smack, give us an inside of what it's all about. That's what you get in the world's greatest podcast.
Seth, we've had a lot of really good ones, but this one might be the best because those two guys, three guys when you include Coach Gard. Coach Gard, man, he was loose. I like it. He was loose. He was ready to go. For those of you that don't know, there is nobody more connected in the world than Seth Greenberg. Seth Greenberg has been the coach of the year of the ACC, was in Jim Rome's wedding, and now just got two of the most popular, you know, men in the country to come on our podcast. So when you think of Seth Greenberg, don't just think of a human thumb. Think of a man of think of a man of character. Think of a man that is more connected than the Corleone family back in the 70s, baby. Reference, look that one up, by the way. Google the Corleones for those of you too young. Great stuff.
Thanks for being with us here. And I got a question. Obviously, I'm a huge fan. I think the hardest thing to do in coaching is to kind of flip your team. And last year, I'm going to just go back to last year for a second. You guys lost 3 out of 4, and then you won the last 8 games. I think that is by far, without a doubt, the hardest thing to do in coaching. How were you able to keep them engaged and flip the season in the middle of the season after going through a rough patch?
Well, I don't think, you know, Seth, I don't think we ever lost them. I think the results weren't at the end of the day, at the end of the game, weren't what we wanted. And obviously we went through a variety of things, and nothing was more catastrophic and traumatic than Howard Moore's accident the summer before. So that always, anytime I think we hit a rough patch during the season, and obviously we had Kobe King leave. We had our strength coach got let go. So a variety of things that, you know, were out of left field punches at us. But anything that was adverse in nature failed in comparison when you stood it up next to what we had gone through the summer before. So really, you know, they got real life adversity. They got a dose, hard dose of that the summer before. So I think that was always an anchor to go back to, like, hey, it ain't that bad, you know, get over yourself. Everybody else already has. This is a first world problem with, all right, we lost a basketball game or two. But I tell you what, we went to Iowa and we led by 12 with 7 minutes to play. And really for the course of 40 minutes played better than they did. We didn't finish the game, but the competitive fight that I saw at Iowa knew that we had a chance. And, you know, we ended up coming back, and that was when Davison got suspended. For the next game, that's when we played Michigan State at home and won. And then we went to Minnesota and lost. But then that was it. We didn't lose after that. So that game at Iowa, even though maybe from the outside looked like the sky was falling, I left Iowa City going, you know what, if we have that, we're going to win our fair share. We're going to be fine. And we were.
Great job.
Coach, we talked earlier, and you said you did not bring your players other than some freshmen back this summer. And explain that if you don't mind, because normally coaches do. They're there all summer with their players. Explain that if you don't mind.
Well, first of all, we could not get in our facility. I could get them into the football weight room for 1 hour a day. I could not get into either one of the gyms. Our practice facility was having a new floor put in. The Kohl Center was not on part of the campus's reopening phase yet. We were trying to get football up and back with a heartbeat and try to have a chance to play. So knowing that we weren't going to have a facility, I didn't want to bring them back just to lift because I know what 12 or 15 guys are going to do. They're going to go and be in 12 or 15 different gyms. And that was going to be a problem in terms of what the virus was going to present us. Secondly, I knew that, like I mentioned earlier, that if I brought all of them back, and one of them got it, and we were around each other in the weight room, and obviously we know a lot more now about it and how we handle it than what we did back in June. But if one got it, we were all going to be shut down via contact tracing. So I felt it was better to leave them home. I explained two or three different times I pushed the date back. It was supposed to be mid-June, then I pushed it to the 4th of July. Then we had a spike in the Madison area in terms of virus cases. So I kept doing these Zoom calls with the team saying, all right, guys, here's what we can do in Madison. And we had sent them equipment, what we could do in the spring when we knew we weren't going to have them back for the summer, bands and med balls and, you know, light stuff that we could ship to them. But they kept saying, coach, we're able to do more. Some were able to get into gyms quicker than others. Some had ordered their own weight, you know, with Potter specifically, his brother's on Ohio State's defensive line. So they got their own weight room in their basement. So he was working out like a football defensive lineman with his brother through the spring and summer, which I was like, hey, you aren't going to be able to do that here. So keep at it. You know, so it just got to the point where they felt they were doing more, and I agreed. And I think the experience of the group allowed me to trust them. What we had gone through and what we had accomplished the previous season allowed me to trust them to leave them home. We were going to be way better off being at home than coming to Madison and getting shut down. And I listened. We did all these calls with the other 13 head coaches, and some coaches thought they were safer on campus. I didn't think we were going to be safer on campus as a whole. So I just decided to leave them home until, like I said, I brought the freshmen in early August. I brought a couple upperclassmen, joined them. Potter actually joined them because his trainer had to leave, and obviously his brother went for camp and stuff. But Aleem Ford was around and had nothing really better to do. So those two guys joined us, and the rest didn't come back until school started in September. And even then, we didn't do any 5-on-5 until the first day of practice, October 15th, just because we weren't allowed.
Like, coaches make such a big deal. I got to work. You know, if you're not working, you feel like somebody else is getting over on you. Like, looking back on it, I mean, and I know you have a veteran team. It's been well documented, but hell, everybody can come back because of the rules anyway. Would you do the same thing? Like, if you didn't have such –
you know what? I talked to some older coaches, you know, that had – you remember how it used to be, Dan, where you didn't have them in the summer?
Right.
You know what? I think sometimes we overcook them in the off season. We wear their asses out. And by December, they're fried. They've had enough. Their legs are shot. And I was like, you know what? We've just had a long, grueling season. We're not going to have the spring. We're not going to have this. Let me. They're doing stuff. They're working out. They're playing where they could play in open gyms. At least if one got it, it didn't impact all 17. And we had some guys get it. We had three get it in the summer and dealt with it fine. But they got it all back in their home base. So it didn't come in and impact everybody else. And I looked at it and talked to some of the older coaches that knew how it used to be when you didn't have summer access, you didn't have much to do. And I really focused on conditioning in the fall. I did very little basketball because we couldn't be inside. We had a campus lockdown. They locked down two dorms with the students. They wouldn't let them out for like 2 weeks because there was such a rage in the dorms of the virus. So we couldn't do anything outside visible by the general public. So we were sneaking into the football stadium and running the stadium steps. And I couldn't do anything as a group together. So I just focused more on conditioning, knowing that we were going to – basketball-wise, we'd be okay. We'd get to where we needed to be. I wanted to make sure we were ready conditioning-wise, knowing that we weren't going to have time to play ourselves in its shape. The season was going to be cut short. We knew something was going to get cut. We didn't know exactly what yet. It ended up obviously being four games. And we knew the water was going to get deeper than normal, faster. Meaning we weren't going to have as many bye games. We're going to have to jump into some deeper stuff quick. And obviously with the league starting a little sooner and playing more league games sooner, I just focused on trying to really make the preseason in the fall hard. It was harder than we've ever had it. And part two, because as we went through last year, we figured out how to finish games, but I wanted some mental toughness stuff in the fall. I put the hardest stuff to do, which was the stadium steps, which replaced our hill. You probably heard about Bo talk about running hills forever, which we did the same thing. We've done the same things, but we couldn't do it because we couldn't be in public view. So I put the stadium steps on Fridays where you had to go through a week of grueling conditioning and lifting. And then the hardest thing was at the end of the week, you had to finish. You had to come with your best at the end of the week and finish the week. And hopefully that helps us. We'll see how we finish games as we go down the stretch, but it was all part of the mental messaging as well.
Coach, everyone loves routine and continuity, especially when you get in the season. How different is routine and continuity under the situations you're coaching your team now?
I think the other thing that's different is probably the stuff off the court. We can't meet in our film room. We have to use a spaced media room. You know, they don't hang out as much. At least they don't tell me they hang out as much, you know, with each other. We can't go bowling, can't go play laser tag, can't do some of the team building stuff we normally have done. I think on the court, I've tried to keep it as routine as possible. And practices have been the same other than the coach running around in mask. You know, it's the to and from practice that where they've got to, you know, maybe that's out of the ordinary. But I've tried to make the practice and basketball as normal as possible.
You got this veteran team now, obviously playing a Michigan team that's really kind of unique because they have something a little bit like you guys, except they got a legitimate just, I'm going to get to the block, I'm going to seal you, I'm going to catch the ball, and I'm going to score.
Right.
They got those big-ass wings all over the place around them and skill. How, you know, like, they play differently than most people. They play the way a game used to be played. How different is it to prepare for a team that's almost like a throwback team?
Well, it's kind of like preparing for ourselves, you know, because we like to throw it in there too. And I was telling Dan earlier when we did our thing earlier today that, you know, I'm watching all these games and I don't see teams consistently throwing inside, you know, and, you know, we try to do it. We probably don't do it enough. But this Michigan team does. And obviously his emergence, you know, has obviously cemented that even more. I don't know if they threw it. I didn't see early season games. Did they throw it into Austin Davis as much as they are to him? Probably not. That's and you surround them with shooters. You surround them with you lose Xavier Simpson, who everybody thinks, all right, there goes Michigan's point guard, and you have Mike Smith come in, and it's almost damn near a clone. I mean, I'm watching him come up ball screens. It looks just like him, except for the hair is different. You know, he shoots a three better. But, yeah, I mean, the transition from what they were last year to this year with who they lost and with Teske and with Simpson, it had been from the outside looks pretty seamless to me.
Coach, I talked to you earlier about this, but then I really started diving into it. Dimitri Trice, this dude's been unbelievable. I mean, this dude is what you want in a senior. In fact, I'm going to argue tomorrow when we do or today, whenever we drop this podcast, but I'm going to argue during the Michigan game, this kid's first team all Big Ten player, at least. I mean, you know, maybe better than that, because not only is his numbers unbelievable, but his clutch play has been incredible. I mean, literally incredible. I mean, hitting it over big guys, driving past little guys. It's been phenomenal, Coach.
Yeah, you know, Meech is really, he's paid the price, you know, I guess I would say. He's really worked at it. He's taken a lot of arrows during his career. You know, obviously he played behind Koenig in that group when he was a freshman. Sophomore year, he broke his foot like six games into the season, so he missed the rest of the year. Then we struggled. That was the year we really struggled because we had all those guys hurt, including him, which didn't help when you lose your point guard. But, you know, he's just consistently taken a step forward year after year after year. It hasn't been the big splash in the pan that fans get all gaga about. It's been the consistent improvement. You watch his numbers go from, I'd have to look up his freshman, it probably was negative assist to turnover ratio. Now it's 3-1. And I mean, everything about him in terms of his game, I tell you what really has flipped the tables here in the last year is what he's done on the defensive end. And he's taken that personal in terms of how much he studies film. I mean, the night before the Minnesota game, he texts me at 10:30 at night and I'm like, oh, you know, you get a text from a player that late, something's wrong. Coach, can I talk to you? You still up? I'm like, yeah, call me. What's up? He's like, Coach, so he calls me. He's like, I've been watching 3 or 4 Minnesota games here, and I just talked about how we wanted to play Marcus Carr, you know, and what he had studied. And, you know, just his we had come off the Maryland game, which we stunk, and he had spent inordinate amount of time in the ice bathtub trying to get his legs back fresh. It felt we didn't have legs that night. We looked sluggish. He took it personal to get himself ready. He took it personal on the game footage watching with that. And he went out the next day and was lights out defensively against Marcus Carr. And, you know, he just has matured to as a player and how he approaches the game. He approaches it like a pro. I mean, he takes everything extremely serious and does all he can do to make sure he's as good as possible. And that's been, as a coach, that really, man, that's fun to watch. That's, yeah, I'm so proud of him and where he's come from and all the bullshit he had to take when he was younger from our fan base, that he had some expectations ahead of him or he didn't live up to this or that or whatever. But man, you got to really appreciate him now because he's turned into a heck of a player.
Well, I look at Ford and Davison. The thing that's really interesting to me, you put them all into the mix, you know, in somewhere into that mid-post area off of something eventually, depending on, obviously you do a great job of finding that matchup and getting that matchup into that spot. How much time do you spend with those guys? Because they are so freaking patient down there. Like I sit and watch them, they get into that first hash marking, like they wait, your post action's great, but the guy that catches it, for guys that usually aren't used to catching it there, are so patient, they move their men. How much time do you spend doing that?
Well, we do some type of post move stuff every day. So in terms of their comfort of what they're going to go to, I think they're really comfortable, Seth, with what they're going to use and what their post play repertoire is that allows them to not worry about what move they got to go to. Cause they, I always talk about being ambidextrous with your hands, but also with your feet, be able to pivot either way, be comfortable with either foot. So we spend a ton of time on that every day, literally from the time they walk into the door and the time they walk out. We'll do some type of post move something every day. So they're really comfortable with that. And then allows them to work on those other things in terms of vision. And we use an old Stu Jackson thing that was three C's that Howard Moore had when he played for Stu. Was catch, chin, check. You know, it was catch it and turn and look at that inside shoulder and survey it. You know, we talk about Sigma pivoting. To open up and see the floor, see the action that as it's happening. And then I've taken some stuff from Mark Few at Gonzaga that he tries to get his bigs to get to the midline, work that ball to the midline. Can you get a jump? Sometimes post play is too overcomplicated. You think you need 9 different moves. You don't. If you get a jump hook and a dribble drop or a counter, that's it. So we've talked a lot this year about just trying to creep to the midline, get the ball to the midline. And you'll know whether if you get cut off, you're coming back baseline. If you don't, shoot your jump hook. And so just trying to simplify it. And the guys that get in trouble in there and throw the thing off the bottom of the backboard because they're trying to do too much, you know, just simplify it, slow it down. And I say simplify more than anything with the post play.
That's great.
To that point, Reavers 10.9 last year, 10 point this year. Do you need more offense out of him?
Well, you know, a lot's been made out of him that he's been slow out of the gates in games, but he's been terrific in finishing. You know, I don't know. I got asked about that last week in our local media, and I said, well, he's got to change what he eats pregame. He's got to sleep on the other side of the pillow, tie the other shoe first. I don't know why he comes out of the gate slow. I mean, but I tell you what, I like how he finishes. You know, he's on the floor to block shots at the end of a game. He's on the floor to score in the post or get a big rebound or whatever. But so, yeah, I mean, he knows he needs to have a little more zip, a little more pop in the step early in the game. I think part of him, you know, not to steal from every coach in the country, we take a lot from Villanova playing off 2 feet, the pivot series with both our wings, guards and bigs or all of them, but playing off 2 feet is big for Nate. If he doesn't, he's like a baby giraffe. When he gets in there and pops the 2 feet on a good hard jump stop in the paint, he's awful good at the rim. So that's one thing with him is really getting his feet underneath him and playing with the wide base and getting in there. And really when he comes attacks that middle, you can hear it now with no crowd. When I know he really pops the feet on a jump stop, he's going to be good. If I see him go in with 1 foot down, he's going to wobble it and throw up. So he's going to puke up on the rim.
Isn't that amazing? People don't understand that. You can just hear. I always say you can hear good teams. As a coach, you can hear a movement and you know it's right. You only have right?
Yep.
You hear a cut. You hear a jump stop.
Yep.
You hear a rebound, whatever it is. I talk about that all the time with people.
Right. And this year, more than ever, you can hear it because obviously we don't have anybody in the stands.
Right.
Which all you old coaches would have loved. You would have loved that. I mean, the guys like Dick Bennett would have loved this to no end. Other than Tony told me he would swear too much and the TVs would pick it up.
That's what I was going to ask you.
I swear
like it's my job. Like I literally could make money as a professional, teach people how to motherfucking swear.
Right. All right. You're a great pirate. You're a great pirate.
Yes. How would that, like, you've swore twice on here so far. Do you have to watch your language?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Even with the mask on, those boom mics, man, they're too good. Right. Technology is too good.
Right.
Yes.
And the mask is what Coach Holland, when I was at Virginia, everyone thought he was the gentleman coach, and Coach Holland was always buttoned down. But when we got a bad call, he would put his hands over his mouth. That was his mask. Uh-huh. He would cuss those officials out.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the first time I'm sitting next to him, and all of a sudden, I'm here. No good. Black. I'm like, holy Coach Holland's cursing someone out.
Yeah.
I mean,
Bo had the, he would sit with his arms crossed or stand with his arms crossed with a fist in front of his mouth. Oh, yeah. And he'd let him fly. He would swear like a sailor.
but when you got the combination, you got, you know, particularly on a dead ball, right? Dead ball. There's nothing happening. I mean, you unload on an official, man. Well, let's talk about that. Do you think about that, like going into a game, you know, maybe there's an official that you know you got to get on, or are you conscious about, wait a second, every word I say now is going to be heard?
I am. My assistants have reminded me that what I'm saying is been heard by the bench and by the second row and the third row on the bench. And I had an official. I went after an official, I don't know, 4 or 5 games ago during a timeout, and he came over and he was like, he was very good about it. And he's putting his mask on, trying to come to talk to me. He's like, Greg, why are you always yelling at me? I said, because I got this damn mask on and I don't think you can hear me. He goes, I can hear you just fine. You don't have to worry about it.
So, is it a pain in the ass to coach in a mask? Are you coaching in a mask?
It is a pain because it's itchy. It's you don't think you're being heard. You don't think you're being heard. And so you do pull it down. And sometimes, you know, the players might like the mask the best because then they can say, well, coach, I didn't hear you. That's why I pull it down. So if they lip read, they can. That's the only thing about dropping your mask down. Now, TV can pick up the lip read. You know, the lip readers that watch the cameras, watch the monitors can pick up that. But, you know, it is what it is. It's hard sometimes. The timeouts are hard with a mask because you get muffled. And they all have this fake crowd noise playing and all that stuff too. And I look around, I can tell sometimes the guys don't quite sense what I'm saying. So I have a tendency to pull it down. I try to push it up as soon as I recognize it, but it is a pain. You're always fidgeting with it. You're always playing with it.
How is this explained to you? Because my wife coached for a long time. We're both sitting there going, wait a second. You got 10 players on the court, running up and down the court. Nobody's got a mask. The officials don't have a mask. But somehow some coach on the sideline has to wear a mask who's off to the side.
Like, and we're socially distanced on the bench, 6 feet apart, and all those guys are wearing masks.
How is it explained to you why, like, logically, I say there's 13 guys on a court within 94 feet, you know.
Yeah, wear a mask, sit 6 feet apart. But yeah, when you go into that 94x50 rectangle, go put your nose in that kid's armpit.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, it's all message. And
right.
I mean,
it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a question. Your coach, your nearest coach is 6 feet apart. Like, you know, how do you communicate with your staff? Like, how do you communicate with your team? Like I used to like to lean down and like something we did well or something we did well. Say, you see that? That's what I'm talking about. All right. You know, hey, when that ball goes there, all right, you gotta go on the bounce. You gotta go quick. You can't go halfway. Whatever it is, how do you communicate with your staff and how do you communicate with your team?
Yeah, the team is harder. The staff, because they're all right there. I mean, even though they're apart, it's a little more convenient and a little more normal. The team is not, because I'm used to squatting down in front of the bench, in front of those guys that are down from the assistants, and kind of narrate what I'm seeing, like talk the game. So they start to see it through my eyes a little bit. But now I'm looking around. Sometimes I forget to put guys back in because they're social distance chairs 3 rows up. Like I got to search and find them. And then you don't recognize them. Sometimes with their mask on, you know, like, he's been sitting there. Come on, let's go. So that's been a challenge of, in terms of the communication. And also, sometimes you'd glance down the bench and, you know, you look at who's making eye contact at you. They're ready. You know, some kid's looking at the floor and doesn't want to look at you. He's not ready for this moment. But yeah, that's been the biggest adjustment, is where the positioning of the benches. And then they're obviously, I've got guys that are going in and out that are, their assigned seats are 3 rows up.
Bayon told me yesterday, the other day, Bayon, I asked him about the same question. He said, I lost a guy one time. I finally turned to one of the assistants. I said, where the hell is so-and-so? Because he was around on the baseline side. He wasn't behind him. Yeah. He said, I'm looking for him. I turned to Adrian Archer. I said, Adrian, where the hell is Kadari? He goes, Coach, he's right here. He's under the basket.
We don't have anybody in the baseline, but I lost a kid in maybe it was the last game or the game before. Because I had forgot about it, you know, I'm looking around and it's not right there with you. He had gone over on the exercise bike back in the hallway. So I couldn't find him on the bench. I'm like, where did he have to go to the bathroom? Where is he? And they said, no, Coach, he's staying loose. He's back there in the hallway on the bike. I'm like, come on. I got to flag him off the bike.
Hey, man, my older brother told me when I was playing when I was 7 years old, if you come out of game, always sit next to the coach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I never thought that mattered, but now. Yeah,
you bet. You bet. Hey, you know, you go out of sight, out of mind.
Right. Hey, Coach, congratulations. We're going to let you go, man. Great start. It's a fun team to watch. Older than the Bulls. That's the big thing, right? Everybody says older than the Bulls.
Hey, if they all come back next year, we'll be even older. Who knows?
Hey, I hope everybody comes.
Oh, it'd be great for college basketball. We'll address it after the season. I've been asked about it a couple times already, and I want these guys to step on the throttle this year, step on the pedal this year. We'll worry about next year.
Yeah, I get that, but I was talking to Jordan Bohan, and he's like, well, you know, I really don't. I'm like, dude, wait till you're 50. You'll be like, shit, I'll take 5 more years of college.
Right, right. Yeah, they better do before Father Time starts knocking on the door.
Oh, you ain't lying.
All right, take care, guys. See ya.
All right.
Thanks.
Hey, this is a big day for us, Dan. I mean, we're going outside the box.
Seth, are you wearing makeup? Do I see eyeliner?
No, I have no eyeliner here. This is just a bad mug. This is a big day for us. This, we're going to go outside the box. We're bringing in The Bachelor, a world-class athlete, and one of the nicest human beings in the world. I've had a chance to meet Matt Chapman. And the dude is waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning because he's in California to shoot some promo stuff for the show. Matt, first, before I ask you anything, thanks for waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning for us.
Coach, there's not much I wouldn't do for you. I'm honored to be a guest.
Oh, my God.
That's what happens when you're nice to people. So I'm gonna quickly kind of introduce to people how I got a chance to be back. Paige Greenberg, my oldest daughter, was trying to look for a nonprofit for me to get involved with. You know, when you're coaching, you're involved with a lot of different things. And she researched his nonprofit, ABC Foods, which is doing incredible work in cities, educating people on eating correctly, young people on eating correctly, goal setting, and some other things, which Matt's going to get into. But I have to admit, Matt, now that you're the Bachelor, here's the first question that's because it's in my house and it's rampant. My wife, Karen Greenberg, says when you came over with Tyler for dinner that she actually got the first rose. Is there any fact to that?
I can't deniable. You know what? No, I'm not going to deny that. That's true. And listen, I can say that confidently because at the time, you know, I wasn't dating anybody else. So yes, I could say that.
Were you jealous, Seth?
Well, yeah. I mean, Matt's a handsome guy. I'm just an old decrepit dude. I mean, he comes in. These guys come in. They ate everything in our house. All right. I mean, like everything in our house. And they brought a dozen roses for my wife. It was unbelievable.
Hey, Seth, when I came for Thanksgiving, I don't think I brought anything.
You brought a girl that you met at the airport. This is a true story. The guy brought a woman that he met at the airport.
No way.
Thanksgiving dinner. For the first time, he met her. Never met her before. It was kind of set up. And the next thing I know, she's sitting at our Thanksgiving dinner. And my mom, who's at the dinner, is trying to tell her, well, you know what? She wanted a black dress. My mom's like 5'2". She was like 5'11". Well, I got this cutest black dress. Go to New York. You can go in my closet and you can wear it if you'd like.
That's all right. Let's get to serious stuff.
if Seth and I were the Bachelor and there was 18 girls and we walked in, they'd get the hell out of there. Like, they'd be like, hey, I don't care, man. Is there ever pressure? Like everybody's got to impress you, right?
Right.
But you also got to make sure that the one you like stays around, right?
That's honestly the best point that anyone's ever brought up. No one's mentioned that before. And I love that you say that, because that's what I reiterated to the women constantly, is that you all are trying to vie for me, but I need to make sure that I'm doing what I need to do to impress you all, because no one's forcing you to be here. You can leave whenever you want. So that's a great point. And I tried constantly. You know, I don't know if I did the best job at all times, but that's what I was trying to do every time I was around.
Except me walked in there, like, they could even be in their 50s. They'd be like, what? You too? Oh, hell no.
They don't discriminate. Listen, there was women all ages, all shapes, all races, and it was fun, because usually, you know, when you're dating somebody, there's a structure to it. And when you're out during that experience, you do so many different things. So parts of your personality show and come out that you would have never imagined. And you're able to kind of let these women know everything about you in such a short amount of time.
Do you watch the show now?
Of course. I watched last night. I watched the night before.
Do you watch it and go, well, that didn't really happen that way? Or, well, there's more to it than that.
You know what? I watch it and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I sound like that. Like, I, when you watch yourself back, I just sound ridiculous, and it's kind of cringy, but I've been watching it with my mom virtually, so it's been fun to just kind of share everything that's going on in real time.
All right, so what's she think? I'm sure you share something with it, all right? But like your mom's the head coach, all right? Like your mom's sitting there going, Matthew. I mean, like, what so far, what she's watched, hey, what's been her critique?
My mom's critique is that she loves everybody. She's like, what about her? What about her? I'm like, Mom, at the end of the day, you've got to narrow your decision down. It can't be that broad sweeping. She's like, I know, but what about? And I'm just like trying to reiterate to my mom that at the end of this, like, I can only be engaged to one person. So the problem with Mom is she loves everybody. So I've been
having you love everybody. You love everybody. You over here kissing, swapping spit with everybody.
How did this guy get a link?
You keeping the drama around. You love drama too.
Who is this guy? I thought this was a close chat.
Nah. Seth brought me out here to fire you up, man.
they're just letting anybody in now.
You got decision making skills like Doug Peterson right now. Oh jeez. Hey, for those of you that don't
What advice did your boy give you before you went on this adventure?
First of all, I just want to make sure this is still a secured line and they're not just letting anybody in. Was he invited or we're good still? All right, cool. No, Tyler gave me great advice. You know, he just told me to be myself. And I know that's very cliche and basic, but it helps when you're in these situations where you're like, how do I act? And it's like, just how you would in the real world. And I just kind of doubled down on that. And having Tyler go through that whole experience before I did gave me a lot of confidence to step into something like that.
Hey, Tyler, a question for you. In the middle of this show, like while he was taping, did he ever pick up the phone and went, T, holy, what the hell's going on?
I wish he could. He couldn't really get a hold of me. They take his phone away, you know? So I was trying to set up some bad signals, maybe like through the Peloton app, but I never got it. But I could just sense it. I had a twin telepathy thing going on here. And so I showed up, I came and saw him, and that was that.
Hey, let me introduce Tyler Cameron. So everybody knows what we're doing here. Runner up, Bachelor season 15. All right. I have a daughter. She's 22 years old. She's a school teacher in Nashville. I told her I was having you guys on. She goes, Dad, you realize two things. Number one, you're not cool enough. And number two, you realize that these are the two most popular men of our generation. So when you guys go somewhere, it's velvet ropes, right? It's VIP. That. It's popping bottles. What's the life of Tyler and Matt being the two most, quote, popular men of a generation?
Well, I don't know if we're the most popular men of a generation, but, you know, Matt and I like to go to Bojangles, and we don't get much treatment over there. So, I don't know, Matt. You tell him.
It's nice because, you know, anytime we're in public or anytime we're there's a large crowd around and people might be, like, giving you the eyeball, is that? I'm like, yeah, that's Tyler Cameron right there. Everybody, Tyler Cameron right here. Go ahead.
Is that you want to hear something funny? Back when, like, the show was at its, like, extreme hype, you know what I mean? We walk around New York City, and it was a craziness, you know? But the funniest thing is they'd all look at Matt, like, Matt, take the picture, Matt, take the picture, Matt, take the picture. and now they're all pissed because they got a bunch of photos of Matt taking the photo and not in the photo.
Hey, when these guys came, when you guys came to Hartford, I had no idea what it was going to be all about. And I want you guys to explain the nonprofit. But when you guys came to Hartford, I still remember Jackie Greenberg walking in, and all of a sudden she goes, "Dad, you got to rescue those guys. It's crazy out there." And like, I think she said, "Hey guys, are you trying to get inside? My dad's inside there. Let's go."
Hey, we told Matt pull up the Mustang. I jumped in the back of it.
Yeah, I had to come rescue Tyler after the event. You know, you weren't lying, Seth, when you said that we came over and we ate everything. I mean, I kind of felt bad, but I'm glad we brought something. But yeah, that next day, anytime that there was word that Tyler was going to be around, you know, we had to make sure that we were in and out militantly so that we could, you know, get done what we needed to get done. And that was to put on that camp that, and just be a part of that sports camp that you helped us put together. And we brought a lot of kids in and worked them out. And, you know, that's what we try to do. And,
we got smart though. We got smarter as we moved on. Like, we used to be at restaurants, like posting like videos of our food and stuff. And all of a sudden you see people running. And so now we do it afterwards. And
yeah, we're moving smarter now.
Yeah.
Did you guys know each other at Wake Forest?
We did, yeah. So
we sat next to each other on the bench.
That's about to say. You know, when you're not getting a lot of playing time, you just build those relationships with other non-starters. So we're just getting a lot of good time there.
Don't you about the guy playing handy? Oh, that guy's no good.
We just about how cold it was.
He's not lying. It's so true.
So you guys watched the game last night. First of all, both of you guys, how do you pick do you pick who you're going to go on a date with and who's going to go on a group date, or do they do that for you?
You do. You want to be around everybody, but there's limitations. You know, you can only be with, you know, there's only so many people you can have on a date. There's only so many things you could do over the course of those months. So you just hope that you have time to spend that quality time with the women that you really see your relationship going the distance with. And you just run into obstacles with, obviously, drama that came up last night and just in general. So you've got to be on your game and make sure that you're very intentional with your time.
Hey, Tom, when you're watching this back now, I mean, you got, what's going through your mind? I mean, like you're watching this back now, Tyler, and this is your guy now. You guys are like inseparable. I mean, like, what is going through your mind when you're watching your man Matty all buttoned down?
It's that there's a reason why I've been going kind of dark on social media when the show goes on, because I'd be firing him up at the house. I'd be talking some major crap. And I was like, you know what? A lot of this stuff can't go on social media. So I kind of keep it to within the people in the house right here, and you know, it's a safe space for us to rip on that.
Oh my gosh. I can't.
Hey Tyler, I'll ask you this. I had a player that was on the Bachelor, and he got down to, man, he was gonna be the pick.
Yeah.
But he didn't like the girl. I can tell you, I know the girl's name, I can remember. And he's like, "Coach," he told the guy, he goes, "Look, I told these producers, get me the hell off of here. This is going to be embarrassing."
Oh, man.
And the stories of being in there that weren't told are way better than anything you saw on TV. Would you agree with that?
Oh, man. The stories we have of the stuff we did, like when traveling, when the cameras are off, and just all the little things, like even like just stuff that can't be aired. That's the funniest stuff that goes down. You know, that's the craziest stuff, you know. And everyone's like, oh, Tyler, you're the sweet guy on the show. Yeah, but we had a lot of fun when the cameras weren't rolling, too, you know. We tried to drink the plane empty one time when we were coming. Did you see? This is a good story. So we're on the plane, right? It's our first time traveling abroad. We're going from Rhode Island to Scotland, and we're like, all right, we're gonna try and drink this plane empty. And we had this kid. I'm not gonna say his name, but he kind of annoyed us a little bit. You know what I mean? And so I was like, we're gonna play war, and loser has to drink a shot. You know what I mean? But I'm the dealer, and I'm the seat behind him. So I'm dealing everyone good cards. He's getting 2, 3, 4s, 5s, and he's getting like Jack and a King every now and then. You know what I mean? trying to keep him honest. We got him so drunk. This man got up after like 5 games and literally pinballed from seat to seat trying to go to the bathroom, and then fell through the bathroom door.
Hey, Matt, what's the craziest thing that happened that you can actually – I mean, like, people are fainting. I'm like, you're forcing people to faint. I mean, you're standing up there. People are fainting last night. Because of you. I mean, like, you're sitting up there. You're seeing someone dropping. You're the nicest human being in the world. What do you think?
Seth, those moments during the rose ceremony are so intense. Like, I'm surprised more people didn't feel like that, because you're having to tell somebody that – they're not your person, that you're not, like, there's something about them that you can't continue this process with them, which, like, as someone who's a people pleaser, is like one of the hardest things to do. You're breaking up with somebody every single week. So I personally, you know, there's times where I'm like shaking up there. I'm nervous. I'm just like, how do I tell this woman who is beautiful, who has everything going for her, that like, I can't continue with her. And so that for me was the hardest part. And it doesn't get any easier as you form relationships with them and you get to points where it's like, oh my gosh, I have to tell this woman that, you know, she's not my person anymore. And you're breaking people's heart. It's stunk.
Seth, there's got to be some where you just go, I can't wait to see your ass out of here.
There's got to be.
Y'all are ruthless, man.
And I know I'm going to get ready to fire you up when the next episode comes, because I already know you dumb did some, you know, that didn't do what you wanted, you know.
Hey, I've been watching these shows with my wife for 100 years. Explain to the world.
You look good for 100 years, Coach.
Yeah, not bad, right? Not bad. Explain to the world, well, she or he's not here for the right reasons.
Ooh.
For the right reasons.
Is Matt even there for the right reasons?
Right. Hey, listen. I'm saying.
Hey, listen. You know what you signed up for, and it shouldn't come to a surprise to you that at the end of the show, there's obligations, or going there in general, like you're looking for someone to love and spend the rest of your life with. And that comes to a surprise for some people, which still blows my mind, and it should blow everyone else's mind, because it's not like this is a brand new concept. It's something that's been around for years. So that is, you have to reiterate it, because you have conversations with someone, or you'll see them interacting with other people, and you're just like, you got to pose the question, because it doesn't make sense. It's like, how do you not, like what are you doing here if you're not taking it serious? So yeah.
Here's the deal. Like, do they put a villain on? Like, you have a villain on your show. All right. I mean, do they like does every show like have a villain? You almost wonder, like, if the villain is planted and like, all right, this person's going to be just rude and obnoxious. Like, the queenie's got to go. I mean, she's just rude. Tyler, I'm sure you guys have a villain. I'm like, do you like get a sense that now this person, she's a man. Now, come on now. I mean, like, mean spirited.
You know how you can point out the villain? They usually can't dress. On my season, the villain could not dress at all. He wore the biggest baggy. He looked like he was in LeBron James' draft class with how big his suits were.
He was in Doctor's closet.
Hey, wait a second. What's wrong with that? What's wrong? Baggy suits aren't in?
I know you've been watching for 100 years. You see all the new trends.
I know. That's how I do it. That's how, what? Wait a second. Matt's wearing this. Tyler wore that. Honey, don't ever put me in that because I don't look like those two guys.
Coach, we got to get you a tailor, man.
Hey, do you remember everyone's name? Like when you're the first rose ceremony and you got to give it, like, is there takes on this or is it easy to just, all right, boom, 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 right from the start?
So I don't know how it's been in the past, but for instance, the first week, there was a woman who showed up with this big vibrator. That was the first thing she came out of the limo with. And,
Jesus.
And how can you forget her name? How can you forget that person? Because it's so out of left field. And so every conversation you have, whether it's a good conversation or they're bringing some sort of crazy prop in, you remember everybody. So I'm just like, I'm trying to say their name and not what I associate with them. It's like,
right.
You know what I mean? So it wasn't all that difficult.
Hey, Viper, will you accept this rose?
Coach Greenberg, I'm going to spin that question back on you. Do you remember all your players' names?
That's a good question.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I do, but I used to call them by the wrong name a long time.
Yeah.
You know, like you get in a moment, you know, you do on the grease board, doing a play, and all of a sudden, you know, you'll say the same guy's name twice, and like the guys in your timeout will be gone.
No? Because I got a guy I'm sitting next to right now who Matt and I know really well. Ooh. Who was on the far, far end of your bench probably when your time at USF. I don't know if you remember him, Rob Rich.
Oh, yeah. What's up, man?
What up, Rob?
What up, Matt?
That's a legend. That's a USF legend right there.
Hey, Rob, give us your best Tyler Matt story.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. Well, before I give you my best Tyler Matt story, I do have a question for Matt. I haven't seen Matt since the episode last night, but Matt, I've got a question about The Bachelor, man. It seems like when there's a little bit of awkward silence, you just smooth that over with a kiss.
Hey, I'm going
to
say this.
I don't know what to say. Bam, I'm just going to make one on.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, personally, I don't think there's ever a wrong time for a kiss.
Oh,
that's my approach. That's my approach.
I can tell you there's some wrong times for a kiss.
Your guys' sports backgrounds, does it ever help just like with all the crap that's going on, like going, oh, you know, I dealt with this or I dealt with this. I can put up with the next 15 minutes of this person or this situation.
Big time, big time. I take a lot of the mantras that my coaches taught me. And I kind of reiterate them to myself. The biggest one for me when I was on the show was be where your feet are, is what my coach always said. It was about like not let the moment be bigger than you are, you know? And that kind of always grounded me when I was, you know, in The Bachelor. I was like, okay, we had this beautiful date, all these crazy things and this beautiful set and all this stuff. But also remember, like, be where your feet are. Remember what you're doing. Remember you got a family at home you got to represent, all those kind of things. So I think like being having the sports background definitely gives you kind of an edge, and also like with the light too. Like, you know, Matt was a third string receiver. I was a backup quarterback. You know, we almost saw the light, so we saw the people in it. We got to understand what it was like. You know what I mean?
That's actually the best. That's an incredible point to piggyback off what Tyler said. Like we've been in the spotlight, having not been in the spotlight. You know, we've seen people who have had success and people who have used it improperly. And so having gone through that, like in the shadows, it's helped when you're getting a lot of attention or you're having to navigate situations where there could be damning implications to it. Like if you mess up at school, you're ineligible. Like if you mess up here, it's like the whole world knows. So you just make good decisions and you're a good person. And those are qualities that are instilled as a player. Showing up early to meetings, making sure you're on time, making sure you're not talking back, making sure you're doing the right thing, going to class, being a good person, like all those things you learn as a college athlete, like they rear their head in the working world and the professional world in ways that I never thought I would experience or imagine. And I'm so grateful to that experience. Granted, you know, I wasn't a
Calvin Johnson, but the things I took away have paid off tenfold, you know.
What do you do with the camera right in your face, though? Like, you know, like you're playing suck face with this girl and there's a camera right in your face. I mean, like, the camera's right there, right?
You know what? I've had a lot of experience with that because, you know, Tyler and I have been friends since college, and I used to follow Tyler around parties with my camera when he was so he was used to it. I think I prepped Tyler very well. You know, I've been following him.
Yeah, we'd be in a dark party, it'd be a big flashlight on me all the time.
Hey, Tyler, you
Matt,
ever
the Matt James kiss cam.
Hey, just to show you how old Seth is, the word suck face hasn't been used in 1,000 years. Tyler, you ever regret not saying yes to the being the bachelor?
No. I think it's an incredible opportunity. You know, it's a great honor to be the bachelor. Matt's in a great position, and it's well deserving because Matt's who he is. But I always, you know, I think when the show kind of came to an end for me, and you know, everything kind of opened up, the world opened up to me, I was like, I want to see what the world is for me now, you know, and also I want to be able to choose who I want to date and not have them choose it for me, you know. So I don't know. I just never. My heart wasn't in it, and I don't think you can do anything until your heart's in it. So I'm not. I was never ready for it.
What do you guys have? Is it like 6 weeks of isolation? What do you have? What's the setup of the bachelor?
2 months, basically.
Secluded for 2 months.
Pretty much, yeah. I think Tyler's situation was a little different because we weren't having to worry about COVID and Corona during their shooting. So they were able to kind of travel the world. And now the way that they're doing production now, as you all could attest to, you have your testing schedule, you got to quarantine, you have to make sure that you can set up shooting in a location that can provide everything that Nim McCollum was able to provide for us when we shot this past fall. So it's a little bit more difficult, and we don't have as much stories of drinking out planes, traveling, because we're not doing as much traveling, but we're still having a good time.
Explain ABC Foods.
Yeah.
Because I think what you guys have done and what you're doing is incredible. And then after that, I need to know what I'm sure Maya has jumped in and kind of reacted. Maya Brown has reacted to your escapades in some way, shape, or form. But explain ABC Foods.
Yep. So ABC Food Tours was something that me and Tyler kind of ripped the concept off of what we had experienced at Wake Forest, where at Wake Forest we would invite students onto campus who were from low income areas and hadn't experienced that college experience, been around college athletes, and take them on tours of the university, and then we'd have a meal with them at the end of the day. And when we graduated and we didn't have that platform as Wake Forest and FAU athletes to do that, then we thought about ways to do it in our own community. So New York being as ethnic and as culturally diverse as it is, we wanted to have these students in low-income areas in New York that we visited and that we spent our money in. We wanted them to experience what we were experiencing. So we were taking them to nice restaurants. We're introducing them to culture through food. And then we add the fitness component, where we're having Equinox trainers come in and show them how to live a healthy lifestyle. We're going to Hartford, Connecticut and partnering with you and having basketball clinics for kids who are the only thing keeping them out of the same opportunities that Tyler and I, and I'm sure a bunch of other kids we know, is economic. And we don't want that to ever be the case. So we try to bridge that gap.
Awesome. It's such a great concept. And we had a blast. We had a blast doing it. Kevin Ollie came in and spoke as well. And I just, you know, I still get a lot of those kids and families that were at the clinic sending me messages and, you know, are we going to do something again? And, you know, obviously COVID, it's impossible. So, I mean, in a small microcosm of what we did here, and I know all the stuff that you've done there, and I'm following actually on Instagram, all the interactions of the people that have been involved with ABC in New York. I think it's really good. I mean, you know, to stay in the moment and give back and try to impact someone else like you've been impacted is great stuff. Is there a way people can donate to that?
Yeah, we are now under the designation of being able to take and receive taxable donations. We revamped our website. So abcfoodtours.org, check it out and see if it's something that resonates with you.
Seth did a basketball clinic for you guys. Who's a better player?
Tyler's probably the better player than me. I think I'm more athletic, but I can't shoot and I have a hard time dribbling. So
guard Matt like you guard Ben Simmons. You just give him everything from the circle. You know, you stay inside the restricted area in the paint, and you just let him try and shoot.
Wait a second now. Wait a second. And we know you're going to go left.
Exactly.
I go left. That's it. But I got muscle. You better get out of my way.
He'll power it in, though, Seth.
Hey, Matt, when is this – when can you, like you have to – can you go out in public now? I mean, are you okay? Because you can't give away what's happening on the show, right? I mean, isn't that a big deal?
You just can't be seen with, whenever you're – you just have to be very cautious, you know.
Dan, ask the question you want to ask. Go on, Dan. Ask the question you want to ask. Dan wants to ask you. It's just between us. No one else is here listening. Who'd you pick? That's what he wants. No one's listening.
No one pays attention to us.
That's a great question.
Hey, coach, I got a question for you.
Yo, what's up?
Now, at what age do they make it mandatory you have to have an elliptical in your living room?
Dad, that's for you, Dad.
It's a basement, so I feel better about it, right? It's a basement. I'm downstairs. My life is a cartoon, so it wouldn't be out of character to have an elliptical upstairs in the living room.
Dan, tell him what happened on the Peloton the other day. This is how old he is. Like, he's talking about me being old. I got the treadmill right here. I've never fallen off the treadmill, right? I'm religious. I'm killing. I'm down 30 pounds because you guys motivated me with your Zoom workouts. But, Dan, explain to the good people out there what happened to you on the Peloton. You talk about a guy that's past his prime, who is no longer an athlete. This is what my man, who guarded Michael Jordan and stopped him, this is what happened to Dan Dockich on the Peloton. Go ahead, Dan.
There's a little effing knob right there where the seat is. And if you don't tighten it all the way, the seat goes boom. And your feet are in the stirrups. I'm not lying. I think I broke my left wrist. And I don't think I tore my ACL, but it hurts bad and it's swollen like hell. So keep that knob, right? That little black knob under the seat.
Just a little low. Yeah.
Listen, I'm very glad you're okay. I would pay any amount of money for there to have been footage of that place.
Oh, hey, you. How about me? I get a phone call. He's laying on the floor because you can't believe what just happened. Like, Dan, with you, I can believe anything that happened. He goes, I think I just blew out my ACL. He blew out your ACL. He said, I fell off the Peloton. I had to put the phone down. I had to show
some. All right, back to the Bachelor.
I had to show some empathy for a second because he's my guy, but I had to put the phone down. And I'm like, oh, he fell off the Peloton. I mean, how do you fall? Like a child falls off a bicycle maybe once and then goes out. Stationary.
Dang, lay into him.
Hey, do you guys get paid to be on The Bachelor? What do you get paid? What's the money?
You know what you're paid in? You're paid in the love that you receive. And
oh boy.
That's right.
My heart swooned.
There's no price you can put on the women that you put in front. So, you know, that was
you see this? Pull it, it plays Jingle Bells.
You guys have, since you've been back, Matt, you haven't been to Jupiter, back to Jupiter?
I went back to Jupiter after Thanksgiving. So when I went home, I saw my mom and the family. And then I went back and saw my other family, which is in Jupiter. Okay. And that's where I'll go back. And I've just kind of been based out of because everything going on in New York, there's not a lot to do work-wise. So you're just kind of having to navigate this new landscape we're in until we can deal with everything.
So when you go back and like the world changes, when you two dudes go out, I might have to just tag along and I might be the cameraman.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Seth, bring that big wallet too.
That's all right. Wait a second. I don't need a wallet when I'm hanging out with you two guys. You guys haven't paid for anything in years. Come on now. But hey, I'll be glad to bring the wallet. No doubt about it. Hey, the hardest thing was when you went to Syracuse to do that speech and visit with Jackie. What's it called? Her friends about lost their mind. They're like, Jackie's going, what's going on here? What is it?
Now, me and Jackie had to hide from like spot to spot. You know, we were trying to eat and trying to chill, and it was crazy. Syracuse is a great place, so we had fun there.
Yeah, Syracuse is she's happy she's out, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, I bet. It was a cold place.
Well, Tyler, you have a history of dating famous women.
There we go. This is why I signed in.
Who's next on the list?
I'm just worried about, you know, taking care of Matt and his lady. I don't got nothing.
You know? Okay.
Oh, you see, that's a veteran right there. That is a veteran.
That's a man of deflection right there. You know, I'm worried about Matt's relationship right now. So, you know, I'm going to be less selfish here, and I'm going to, you know, just really focus on making sure him and his girl are good. If she, you know, if she's not feeling good about the show, you know, I'm there. You know, I can't be there for them and then be there for somebody else, you know. So, you know.
What a load. What a complete load of crap that just was. Ladies and gentlemen of America, you've just been bullshit right there.
Hey, I want to know, like, for both of you guys, like, so you watch back the show, like, for Matt, like, whomever you pick, she's watching your whole act with everyone else. Like, how do you backtrack on that one? Like, it's, well, honey, you know, it really wasn't, I didn't really mean that. It was always you. I mean.
This is what you have to do. You have to make sure that, and this is just, thank goodness, just the way that I was raised by my mom. You have to make sure that you're treating everybody with respect. And if you're treating all the women that you meet and date with respect, then hopefully when everything comes to an end and wraps, that you won't have to explain anything that happened. So that's kind of, again, that gets back to knowing that what the experience is. The experience is you're going to be dating a lot of people to try and find your person. So it's like,
fell off TV with a gal and flipped. I mean, I'm watching the football game on one screen. I'm listening to you on the other. And when I heard the crash, I turned to the side. I said, my man could have gotten killed.
Seth, I was so embarrassed. That was like
Matt, you drove like you were drunk. I know you don't drink much.
That was, I felt like Shaquille O'Neal. Like, it was the slowest fall ever. Like, we're just going to the ground. I'm just like, no. and we kind of flew away from the ATV. So thank goodness it didn't hit myself or Bree. But that was scary. That was real. Like, that was very scary.
Wow. That's crazy. Well, hey, I know you guys got stuff going on. You're doing a bunch of promos and shoots. Did you watch the football game? What would you think?
There's a game last night?
Yeah.
I'll say this. I'm still upset that Texas A&M didn't get in. You know, I think that there could have been some more interesting matchups. That's my hot take, and that's all I'm going to say. I think that Texas A&M should have been that bubble team, and that didn't take away from the game last night, because last night we just saw how good Alabama is. I mean, Devontae Smith is up. It's rare you see a talent like that.
I agree. Notre Dame should be banned from all playoff activities. They're just terrible. They're soft. They're crap. Their fan base is crap.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. Notre Dame should be banned. I mean, I think 45 points is the combined total of the BCS championship game and their last game against Alabama. They should be banned. Until you join a conference and start winning some real games, Notre Dame should be out.
I can co-sign that basketball.
Wow. Breaking news. Breaking news. We didn't find out who Matt picked, but we just broke news. There we go.
You guys are absolutely great. Can't thank you enough for the time. I know you're busy as hell, and talking to two old men, you guys just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, you keep on doing that. They know how cool I am. They don't know you. They know you're a typical Midwestern hard hat guy. They know how cool I am.
Yeah.
Really? They do?
Well, I noticed how cool you are by that elliptical behind you, so.
Bad American bad right here, boys.
Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, fellas.
Take care.
Great doing this with you.
Yeah, thank y'all for having us on. We appreciate it.
Well, that's as good as we can do, peeps. I mean, we got in a lot of basketball with Greg Gar. We got in a lot of all just really good stuff with Tyler Cameron and The Bachelor, Matt James. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tell your friends. Let's build this thing up. We'll have more fun.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.